Good morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. The Albert Gore Research Center is one of the seminal institutions of MTSU and has been for some time. In some ways, however, it's sort of the best-kept secret, or one of the best-kept secrets at MTSU. It is a repository of all sorts of historical lore and artifacts, not only about the university itself, but about the university's connection to the greater community. And Dr. Jim Williams is the director of the Gore Center. He's also a professor of history. And we're here to talk about this treasure trove of items and of information that is used by professors and graduate students alike and the general public. Welcome, Dr. Williams.
Thank you for having me.
I remember when the Gore Center was in the Learning Resources Center. It's now located in the Todd Building, which used to be the library, and has since been, the entire Todd Building has been revamped and climatized for your protection. I remember one of the concerns in the LRC was a constant struggle with temperature and humidity issues, climate issues, in protecting some of these artifacts, which are, some of which are very, you know, delicate and go back a long, long way. Is it better in the new location where you are now?
It's much better. The space is better in terms of, it's not a round space like the room here in the LRC was. And it really was designed to house an archive. We have our own HVAC system, heating and cooling, for the collection area. It's separate from the rest of the building. So we can control the temperature and humidity. And like any museum or archive that is trying to uphold professional standards, we try to keep a constant 72 degrees temperature and 50% relative humidity year-round. And that's the best advice for anybody, not just us, but anybody trying to preserve old things, whether it's paper, leather, plastic, things that we have in our houses, like constant humidity and temperature. And they like it cooler rather than hotter, and drier rather than wetter. And that's why basements are, in some ways, they have the constant temperature, but they also have the higher humidity usually. And attics have the higher temperature and sometimes, and the great fluctuations of temperature and humidity. So we have that well under control at the Gore Center. That's been a big improvement. And we just love our space. And in some ways, it's coming full circle because the Gore papers started out in the basement of Todd Library, back when it was a library. They moved to the Gore Center first location, and now they've moved back to the Todd Building. And we're in the basement, the lower level, and that's where the Gore papers were for a long time to begin with. So they've come back, but come back to a much better space.
How did the donation of Albert Gore Sr.'s papers transform into the blossoming of a research center?
Well, as I understand it, Senator Gore, who of course went to the State Teachers College here when it was the second name of the university was Middle Tennessee State Teachers College, he was encouraged to give his papers, and he was voted out of office earlier than he would have liked, I'm sure, and he expected to be in 1970. So the gift came more quickly than the university was expecting it to. And so it was a bit of a surprise, and I don't think we were that prepared, as I understand it from the library folks and political science people, when the truck backed up in 1971 and unloaded all these boxes from Washington. They were in storage or a room in the Todd Library for a good long while. And then Professor Jim Neal was encouraged by President Ingram at the time in the early 90s to look into something better for the papers where more people could use them. By that point, Senator Gore had actually given them to the university for several years. They were here kind of in limbo. And the space here on campus is always an issue, as you know. So the space was found over here in the Learning Resources Center. And Jim Neal, encouraged by Dr. Ernest Hooper from the History Department, who recently died, to take the Gore papers and use those as a core for a much bigger collection, they hoped over time, about Rutherford County, the region that MTSU sits in and serves. Most of our students are from the 50, 75-mile radius. So that's really the area that they started thinking of the Gore Center as a regional archive. So what we find in rural counties, especially all over the country, is they don't have the resources to or local organizations don't have the resources to really have a professional archive for their materials. So they envision the Gore Center as a service to the community, but also in accepting these materials, of being a place where our students, our faculty, members of the community could come and do research, class projects. And that's really what it's developed into to this point. Is the Gore papers are still the largest single collection that we have, but they are now a fraction in terms of the volume of materials that we have. They will always be a large collection, but as time goes on, they will be a smaller fraction because we're constantly adding materials with that original vision from the 90s in mind of serving the community and collecting things. For a while, the Gore Center ran the Rutherford County Archives. Mm-hmm. Jim Neal arranged for that, and we actually housed some things on occasion, but now that the county has its own archive, the university still provides graduate assistance, and the county pays for it, and they have their own facilities. So the Gore Center helped birth the Rutherford County Archives, and that process is going along across the state. So I think most counties now have their own archives. Sumner County opened one recently. But then there are the historical societies and the civic organizations and the families who have family papers and don't know what to do with them. The state library can't collect everything, doesn't want to collect everything. So universities fill that void for communities. And that's one of the exciting things about being in a place like MTSU, because I get to go out and meet people and help them, encourage them to preserve the history of the region. And the more I learn about it, the more interesting it becomes to me.
You talked about space issues, which I assume would always be a matter of concern for a repository of historical materials. Now, Senator Gore's papers would have been typewritten since he did not serve in the age of the computer. For purposes of space reduction issues, is it important to digitize as much of the older papers and items as possible, or is there still some value as a historian and as an archivist to having the originals in hand?
Well, there's a practical issue with digitizing, and that is the labor and the expense involved. Really, you know, there are some people who think within our lifetimes or a lot sooner that they'll never have to leave their house. They'll just go on the web, and every presidential library or the National Archives or local historical society will have digitized everything, or Google will have done it for us. I don't think that's ever going to happen. So the practical reason is that nobody has the time to sit there and scan every piece of paper, and you really don't want to. Because there are some parts of the collection that are seldom used. There are others that are used a lot. So I think what most libraries and archives do now is to selectively digitize materials, either for curriculum purposes, so that students at a distance can learn, or the more popular things to reduce the handling of fragile objects you can scan that way. Sometimes scanning does also help bring out old handwriting or faded ink. So there are some specific purposes that digitization is helpful. But in terms of coming in and actually handling the stuff, I don't know. I think some people, it's more of a aesthetic or philosophical thing that they like seeing the original. I can tell you, you know, from personal experience working with the Churchill papers in England, that some of the more used collections there have been microfilmed or photocopied, and I've had trouble needing to see the originals because the Churchill would write in red ink, and you can't see that if it's a black and white copy. You can't be sure that it's actually his handwriting and check marks or little things like that.
And heaven forbid it would be smudged by somebody dropping, let's say, a spot of brandy or a cigar ash on it.
Right. So sometimes the originals are really essential. You see things that somebody microfilming or now digitizing missed or doesn't show up. So it's a complicated issue. We do hope to digitize our photo collection, which is very large, thousands of photographs. We hope to put film and video that we have from the university and Senator Gore and some other collections online. We do think that's a good use of our time, and it's already visual material, so it makes sense to just reformat it. But for those students or the public hoping that someday they can just sit down and see everything in the Gore Center, it's not going to happen, just like it's not going to happen at the Truman Library or the National Archives. It would be a mammoth task. We have a hard enough time with our staff to process collections that come in and describe them and prepare the finding aids without having to add that extra step. Mm-hmm.
I know you have more than just papers. You have buttons and bumper stickers and all kinds of paraphernalia. Not all of it is even political. You referenced attics. The Smithsonian Institution has been referred to as America's attic. Is the Gore Center MTSU's attic?
Well, we would like to be. The university does not currently have an archive. A lot of universities and colleges, the archive is located in the library or is a part of the special collections usually the library. It's a unit of the library. That it didn't develop that way at MTSU. It doesn't have to be that way. So the Gore Center, by default in some ways, has, or by design, if you talk to Jim Neal and the other previous directors before me, we've taken on that function, and I think it works very well for us to do that because it's hard to categorize. You know, the university's attic is in a lot of ways the community's attic because so much of what happens here involves the community. So many people in the community went to school here or have children or family that went to school here. So that line is blurry, and so in becoming a regional archive, it makes sense for us, I think, to be the university archive. And one of the things we are doing over the next 2 years in preparation for celebrating the university's centennial and beginning in September 2011 is to become more aware of what is in the university's closets and the mini attics across the campus, this 500-acre campus. There's
That's
a lot of buildings.
A lot of nooks and crannies
to peek
into. A
lot of file cabinets, a lot of boxes. We have warehouses off campus, and nobody really knows what all's there. We have some things already at the Gore Center that faculty and others have given over the years of their personal collections mostly. Very rich collections. But what we don't yet have are a lot of administrative records. So that's one thing we're working on.
From, say, past president's offices, for example?
President's offices, on down the line, vice presidents. We have a collection of Q.M. Smith's papers, present from 1938 to 58. that he saved and I guess took home with him, and at some point his daughter gave them back to the university. But I don't think by any means they were his full office files. I don't think we've done a I don't mean to be critical, but and it happens at other places. It's not unique to MTSU, but I don't think we've done a good job in across the 98 years of our existence of preserving those kinds of records. Presidents come and go, provosts, vice presidents, deans come and go. And typically, I think what happens, they run out of space. They tell the office staff to clear it out.
Pack it up. If you don't need it, ditch it.
Ditch it, shred it. There's no place for it to go. Otherwise, we typically don't want to spend money storing things that don't seem to be of value. So that's been more of the custom, and it's understandable why it's been that way. But part of the culture change that I hope we'll be able to accomplish by the centennial is to persuade people when they are retiring files to think about sending them to the Gore Center for archiving. Let us decide how the records management policy that the Tennessee Board of Regents has for us, how it applies, not put that burden on every secretary, on every executive aide across the campus to decide what's historically valuable or not. And I think in a lot of ways it will be liberating and time-saving for those people just to know, I can put it in a box, call the Gore Center, they'll come and get it, and let the professionals decide what's historical, what's not. There's, of course, concerns now about sensitive information in digital formats, but also on paper. You know, a lot of our paper through the years has had people's social security numbers. So we are preparing for that to allay concerns of that offices might have that somehow if they surrender a file with a student's social security number or something, that somehow it will up in the hands of a researcher at the Gore Center. But we have a process and a security. We're getting a security cage to add a extra layer of security in our collection area for things like that, but especially valuable things.
Do you think perhaps the reason that that there have been relatively few records from the administrative offices is because of the highly political nature of higher education administration sometimes, and the sensibilities of the moment of the president of the moment might have leaned in the direction of, well, I'll just take them home with me and keep them because I don't necessarily want people to know that this discussion took place on such and such a date. And not that there was necessarily anything nefarious going on, but a great deal of business is conducted sub rosa, both for the good of the university and because it's more expedient.
I think that could be one of the explanations. I don't know what the motivation of the presidents or I do think that probably has been the case for some people, that they would just like politicians, they would just rather, you know, the politicians you hear about who burn their papers, mm-hmm. or the children burn the papers, or they take out the things that they think are not flattering before they give them away or something. But I think here it's been just more of a culture of, why would anybody care? I think we have, in a sense, an inferiority complex of the importance sometimes of what we do.
They think when they think history, they don't think local. They think national or global, but they don't think local.
Well, and it's also who cares about the academic master plan that we developed, or the SAC study, or the policy, or the course, or whatever the paperwork is, or the letter that President so-and-so wrote to somebody. Who cares about that? It, you know, from the people involved, they don't necessarily think in terms of why this might be valuable from a historical perspective to somebody 20 or 50 years from now who is interested in the way the policies were developed, the contact between the president and politicians. And a lot of, you know, the interesting thing about the high level of our history, to really get that, you have to go to the state archives, because the state Board of Education that controlled us for a long time, now the Board of Regents, they kind of operate under stricter rules, or they're more, the state archives expects them and has more contact with them. The university campuses are kind of out there on our own. We have rules and laws and regulations, but there's not really a lot of enforcement in terms of records. So I think it's really just been left up to each campus to do its own thing. And it's not usually a high priority. Why should we spend money storing or saving these things and having archivists and so on, when we need to be staffing classes or building new classroom buildings or something? So, again, it's not certainly unique to MTSU. And the motivations, I think, have just been more of a lack of historical awareness. QM Smith saved his papers. I talked to another former president recently who said he'd thrown away everything, including his diploma from college. You know, wow. He's just not a saver. And
how can an educator throw away his own diploma?
Well, he said, you know, and this is, I run into this all the time, talking to family of former faculty who have passed on, or staff, or when you ask about, well, what were there syllabi or class notes or lecture notes or those kinds of things, and they look at me like, why would anybody want those? And if you go to someplace like Harvard or not that Harvard's the best example, but I had contact with Knox College in Illinois a few years ago for a research project I was working on, and I had some information about an alumnus of theirs from the 1860s, and I wrote them and sent them what I had, and they wrote me back and sent them what they had in their archive, and it was clear that they had an archive that was keeping track of their alumni and preserving materials and very well organized, and it just showed me that it can be done, and I think one of the things that MTSU could do better, especially in cultivating connections with our alumni, which we do really well in some ways, is to make them aware that their lives are important, and we want to document those lives. All the teachers that we send out, business people on down the line, you know, some of them do really remarkable things. And even if they're not industry leaders or teacher Hall of Fame members, many families have sent generations of students here. So that's one of the functions that the university attic or the archive can serve, is to document the contributions of the faculty, employees, alumni, to the university, but also to the community, and that's what a lot of universities do, and it builds up this sense of goodwill and community among the alumni, their families. So that's what one of the goals I'm shooting toward is to develop the Gore Center even more in that direction.
How are the recession and the ongoing battle of the budget affecting the Gore Center's operations? And this is your hint to get in a pitch for donations if you so desire.
Well, the writing is on the wall for places like the Gore Center, you know, any nonprofit organization, the university in general. We are getting less and less of our money from the state, more and more of it from students or donors. And the Gore Center is no different. Currently, almost all of my funding comes through the College of Liberal Arts. A lot of what we do is for the whole university, but we're funded by the College of Liberal Arts. So as we grow and expand our activities and mission to help K-12 educators and document the lives of veterans and participate in the Library of Congress Veterans History Project and some of those things that aren't necessarily core to the mission of MTSU, but I think are important. an important service, I realize and the administration realizes that to really sustain that and to grow, the Gore Center is going to need to have more private outside support. I've tried to increase our revenue a little bit, but that's never going to cover the cost of the staff and the facility and all of that, which the university pays for. So the longer-term goal is to build up a core of supporters, the $25 donors, the larger donations, foundations, grants, those kinds of things. I'm working more and more on those things so that we can build up some endowments. I have some goals for longer-term endowments. You know, the ultimate goal would be to be completely sustained by endowment and not have to depend on state appropriations through university. That's in the distance, I'm sure, a ways. But in the meantime, these activities that I would like to continue and build up, like the Veterans History Project, the Oral History Project that documents, we interview members of the community, those are some of our more expensive projects. Our equestrian history collection, I'd like to build up. So we need people who are interested in those activities. Democracy education. I'm trying to build a democracy education center. We already have some projects going to do computerized simulations using Senator Gore's papers, historical situations where students and teachers can sit down and kind of reenact those the Civil Rights Act or the Vietnam War from Senator Gore's perspective and Tennesseans' perspective. Those things cost money, and we have a new brochure. We'll be debuting a new website later this summer, and there are plenty of opportunities for people to volunteer at the Gore Center, to contribute that way, or to contribute financially for the long-term sustained operations of the Gore Center.
That might be one of the misconceptions about the Gore Center, because Gore Sr.'s name is in your title. People might think you're somehow endowed by the Gore family, or that all your funding comes from the Gore family, and such is not the case.
No. The family has been very supportive, and the one large project that has been privately funded that will be coming to fruition here in the next year or two is the official biography of Albert Gore Sr.
Is that the one that Tony Badger's been working on?
Yes, he's working on it and promises to have a final, well, at least a full draft later this year.
Our British friend. He's
yes,
a lovely fellow.
He is. So we're looking forward to that. And that was a six-figure gift and campaign. But once that project's done, that money's gone, and we're back to where we started. So we need to have more projects like that. We did not get a big gift from Senator Gore Sr. or anybody for that matter. We, of course, would like to, not just from the Gores, people who like the Gores, but anybody. We're not a... We accept money from Republicans as well as Democrats, and from alumni as well as people who have no connection necessarily to the university.
Al Gore Sr. had some Republican friends now.
He did, and we got they came through when this biography was proposed and as a tribute to him. And so I think there are opportunities for people who aren't currently affiliated with the university or donating to the university to become interested in the Gore Center, and perhaps through that to learn more about MTSU and to be supportive of other academic areas.
And to learn more about the Gore Center, what do people do? How do they contact you?
Well, the best way would be to go to our website, which is under reconstruction right now, but it's fully functioning, and it's Gore Center, one word, .mtsu.edu. And eventually, you know, we'll be building that up to not only have the basic information that's there now about our collections, but also that all of our photographs will be online, our, like I said earlier, our audiovisual materials, our three-dimensional objects. You mentioned bumpers and bumper stickers and buttons, and we have more and more museum-type objects too. And another thing I haven't mentioned that people could very well be interested in donating to, I hope so, is a Centennial Museum of MTSU History, which is in the planning stages, and that will be located at the Gore Center in Todd Hall. Not a huge space, but large enough to tell the central themes of MTSU's history in time for 2011, to be a place where prospective students and their families can come, new students, current students, alumni when they come back and are reminiscing. So I will need about $75,000 for that, and have begun planning and fundraising for that as well. So if people can look at the website, but also call me at 615-898-2633, and I'd be happy to talk to them about donating materials or money or volunteering. That's another thing. I hope to have more and more volunteers from the community. We have some really interesting things that I think if people had the time and the interest, they could come in or even sit at home and do some of the work there. I've tried to encourage people to do things like watch some of the TV programs that MTSU has produced over the years and do logs of what happens, and they can do that. It's like sitting at home watching TV and sort of taking notes. So
yeah,
it's possible to do some of that. So we have lots of, I think, opportunities and for the community to support us, and I hope they will.
Dr. Jim Williams, director of the Albert Gore Research Center, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
This is MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Loeb. Join us again at the same time next Sunday. You can catch the podcast at your leisure at mtsunews.com. And don't forget, we're also available on iTunes.